content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For today's episode, for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue. On the date that I am recording this episode, we all learned that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed away. So the first article is going to be dedicated to her. The article is titled, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg Dies at 87. This is by Day Elizabeth and was published September 19th, 2020. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died on Friday, September 18th, CNN reports. She was 87 years old. According to a statement from the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg's passing came amid a battle with pancreatic cancer. She was previously diagnosed with colon cancer in 1999 and dealt with her first bout of pancreatic cancer in 2009. She died at home in Washington, surrounded by loved ones. Our nation has lost a justice of historic stature, Chief Justice John Roberts said in a statement per NPR. We at the Supreme Court have lost a cherished colleague. Today, we mourn, but with confidence that future generations will remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg as we knew her, a tireless and resolute champion of justice. In July 2020, Ginsburg announced that she was undergoing chemotherapy for the return of her pancreatic cancer and that she intended to remain on the court throughout her treatment. I am tolerating chemotherapy well and am encouraged by the success of my current treatment, Ginsburg said at the time. I will continue biweekly chemotherapy to keep my cancer at bay and am able to maintain an active daily routine. Throughout, I have kept up with opinion writing and all other court work. I have often said I would remain a member of the court as long as I can do the job full steam. I remain fully able to do that. Justice Ginsburg was appointed to the Supreme Court in 1993 by former President Bill Clinton, where she became the second female justice in U.S. history. She spent her tenure on the court fighting for the rights of women and other marginalized communities, eventually becoming known to many as the notorious RBG. Ginsburg's career encompassed more than her time on the courtroom. She worked as a law professor in the 1960s, served as a fierce advocate for gender equality, and was the co-founder of the ACLU's Women's Rights Project. Ginsburg often credited her mother for her passion for advocacy, saying, "My mother told me two things constantly. One was to be a lady, and the other was to be independent. The study of law was unusual for women of my generation. For most girls growing up in the 40s, the most important degree was not your BA, but your MRS." Justice Ginsburg undoubtedly leaves behind a full legacy that will be honored for years to come. Her passing, less than 2 months before the 2020 presidential election, raises questions about who might fill her Supreme Court seat, as many are already speculating that President Donald Trump will be eager to appoint his third judge. In her final days, Ginsburg expressed her desire for her seat not to be replaced until after the election. "My most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed," she said to her granddaughter, Clara Spira, NPR reports. In recent years, Ginsburg had expressed her determination to stay on the court for as long as possible, telling CNN in 2018 that she planned to remain in her seat until at least 90. "I'm now 85," she said at the time. "My senior colleague, Justice John Paul Stevens, he stepped down when he was 90, so I think I have about at least 5 more years." For the next article, we're going to turn to some pop culture or some Hollywood movie information. This article is titled Ali Cravalho on her new Netflix film, All Together Now. The actor spoke to Teen Vogue about her upcoming Netflix film and life after Moana. This is by Marilyn La Juanice. This was published August 28th, 2020. Auli Cravalho is afraid she's going to have 7 years of bad luck. Her cat, a tuxedo named Rocco, had just shattered a mirror in her home before our call. Superstition aside, success has a way of following Auli. Her career marked by a record-breaking debut in the Disney film Moana. Since the 2016 film, Auli continued her foray into the world of acting with a starring role on NBC's show Rise, Disney's Little Mermaid Live, and guest appearances and voiceovers for projects like Day by Day, Elena of Avalor, and Ralph Breaks the Internet. Up next, the titular role in Netflix's All Together Now, a teen drama based on the novel Sorta Like a Rockstar, by Matthew Quick, that's set to release Friday, August 28th. I knew my life was going to change, Auli says, candidly about playing Moana on our call. At the time, Auli was lauded as not only the first Polynesian princess, but the first teenager to play a Disney princess in the studio's history. She was 14 years old. I didn't know how drastically, but I did know that my life was going to change after Moana. I also remember being really scared, and I still feel afraid of really just how much more publicity my life gets now. In her first live-action film, Auli portrays Amber Appleton, a hard-working teenager that's hiding a huge secret from her friends. She's homeless and trying to help her single mother stay afloat monetarily and emotionally. Despite her constant struggles at home, Amber is able to maintain an aura of positivity, encouraging those around her and striving to reach her dreams. Oh my God, I'm Amber, Auli tells Teen Vogue. I remember reading the script and realizing Amber and I have a lot of similarities. I think of myself as someone who is very optimistic, almost to a fault, in that I'm not as honest with myself or even with those closest to me when I need a break or when I need help. Strength in the face of adversity is admirable, Auli notes, but portraying a character that is forced to realize she's not as strong as she could be without letting her friends help her was an important aspect that drew her to the project, and something that she's learned to do over the years as her career has skyrocketed. We all have our chosen family, and what really makes them chosen family is relying on them and being as real as possible with our struggles as well as your success in life, the 19-year-old says. We all need someone to reach out and check on us every once in a while. You can be that person, and you can also be checked on. Allow yourself to be cared for. Asking for help can be the scariest step, Auli states. She speaks from experience, remembering how nervous she was when she told her mom she wanted to see a mental health professional for the first time. That was so difficult for me, and as a teenager, we're going through it, she says. And Amber, especially, someone who is dealing with homelessness as well as wanting to fight for her dreams to go on to renowned schools like Carnegie Mellon. So it's really important to remember that teenagers and teen stories can have these really deep storylines and can tackle all of these issues and can touch upon them because they're real. And Auli is right. Nearly 4.2 million youths and young adults deal with homelessness each year. Unlike other teenage films, All Together Now isn't afraid to touch upon heavy topics like homelessness, grief, alcoholism, and mental health. It's a film grounded in realism that helps make the film all the more gut-wrenching to watch. But among the powerfully real storylines are pockets of purity and positivity that remind viewers of the hopelessness, of the hopefulness in life. Even the original song, Feels Like Home, by Keegan DeWitt, acts as a beacon of hope, according to Ali. Although she auditioned and didn't get a role in All the Bright Places, director Brett Haley reached out to her for this project. In addition to getting the lead role, Ali E was involved in the casting process. As someone with a mixed plate background, Ali E is Puerto Rican, Portuguese, Hawaiian, Chinese, and a little bit of Irish in like my big toe, she says. Having a diverse cast was incredibly important to her. All Together Now proves inclusivity is easy, not only in making sure people from varying ethnic backgrounds were represented, but in casting and including neurodiverse people. Each person in the cast has their own storyline, their own unique moments that bring them to life in a way that subverts the belief that inclusion is merely having someone appear on screen a singular time. We have people who are non-neurotypical as well as differently abled on our cast, and our friendship and our chemistry works just worked as friends, she says in the casting. In no ways are these disabilities holding them back as actors at all, and they're certainly not holding them back in the genuine relationships that I know I have with them as well. A part of her inclusion in the casting meant Ali E was also hunting for her own on-screen love interest, Ty, who is played by Marvel's runaway star, Renzi Felice. In the film, Amber and Ty have a not-so-typical teenage romance, at least one that isn't often represented in Hollywood very frequently. Their romance is subtle, blossoming out of a friendship and genuine love for each other. That's the great thing about having good friends, everyone, Ali E says jokingly. Friends can become love interests, but they can't always go the other way around. Friendships, of course, is at the heart of the film. Amber is a great friend to everyone in her life, but refuses to accept the love and friendship in return. For people in a similar situation to Amber, Ali E says it's important to be kind and gentle with yourself and not be afraid to reach out and rely on others to help you. Don't try to build up these really hard walls that you yourself will have to break down eventually, which is easier said than done for sure. I can attest to that. But the reward of feeling free again in your own body and in your own mind, it's everything. Ali E left high school to go into online schooling during her junior year, but still fondly remembers participating in drama class akin to Amber in the film. Also, like her character, Ali E grew up in a single-parent household. The actor and her mother are very close. My mom is still very, very much incorporated into my own team. She's CC'd on every email that comes through. And that dynamic is something she wanted to portray with her on-screen mother, played by One Day at a Time's Justina Machado. There's something really, really special about just growing up with a mom. It's just you two against the world. At least that's how it felt like to me, she says. When I met Justina, that's exactly what she brought to the character. Of almost overwhelming love and just wanting the best for your child. But also being in the circumstances that you are, of financial difficulty, and not being able to give everything that you would want. It's heartbreaking, and I love Justina for her portrayal of that. Having these open and honest conversations about her character's authentic actions is perhaps one of the reasons Ali E's character in All Together Now feels so earnest and real. It's this connection to her character that allows Ali E to give such a moving performance, even if it was her first live-action role. It's this genuineness that Ali E brings to not only her roles, but her relationships to her fans, many of whom she's had since voicing Moana 4 years ago. I really loved being a voice actor and giving life to Moana, Ali E admits. I didn't have to worry about my face, and I just naturally kind of have a knack for showing emotion in my voice, which I'm grateful for. But live-action casting just throws you to the wolves, man. And you have to portray that emotion and get real with it. When you cry and your nose runs, you just gotta let it run. Although she has ashamedly not watched Beyoncé's new visual album or heard the magic that is Taylor Swift's Folklore at the time of our interview, Ali E says her time spent in quarantine hasn't gone to waste. In between binge-watching seasons of Rick and Morty, taking socially distanced walks to the park, and making her mom's beloved spaghetti recipe multiple times a week, Ali E says she's had time to pick up her guitar and ukulele again. While there's no word on a debut album release, the actress hasn't ruled out the transition to a rising musical artist. Until then, fans can stream All Together Now on Netflix. And our last article is going to come from the Teen Vogue series Uncounted, a series that elevates the stories of women of color who have been disenfranchised and often written out of history. This article is titled The 100th Anniversary of the 19th Amendment, Unpacking the Legacy. And this was published August 11th, 2020 by all of the Teen Vogue staff. The footage is unforgettable. Crowds of people were gathered outside the glass doors of the Kentucky Exposition Center in the summer heat, banging on the locked glass doors, chanting, "Let us in." As the 6 p.m. deadline approached for the state's 2020 primary election, voters at the only polling site in Louisville demanded that they be heard. That is what the history of voting access has looked like in the United States. It is a story of people marching, testifying, shouting, waging court battles, and suffering physical violence to secure the full civic participation they deserve. August 18th marked the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, the largest expansion of the franchise in the country's history. It is a celebrated milestone in the United States story of suffrage and equal rights for women. But in practice, that historic document largely granted voting rights only to those who were white and well off. Sexism, immigration bans, and a patchwork of other discriminatory state laws barred Native, Black, Asian, and Latinx women from voting well into the 20th century. Even now, many Americans of all gender identities remain unrepresented. Those with disabilities are often ignored by lawmakers and face physical barriers in casting ballots. Millions of immigrants living in the United States with green cards or without papers are deprived of a voice. Many Americans with felony records are disenfranchised. Native voters living on reservations or in rural villages are blocked from the ballot by non-standard addresses, ID problems, and mail delays. Puerto Ricans who live on the island can't participate in federal elections. Daunting lines at college campus polling sites force frustrated students away, and 16-year-olds on the front lines of social movements are deemed too young to cast ballots. So many others, due to a lack of information or time, language barriers, or suffocating voter suppression laws and tactics, are prevented from exercising this most fundamental of rights. And they are all part of a decade-long struggle to carve out a place in our imperfect democracy. And yet, despite these daunting circumstances, would-be voters have spent decades banging on those glass doors. Teen Vogue spoke to some inspiring women who are currently advocating for other people to have the right to vote, even though they wouldn't have been granted that right 100 years ago. Writer and activist Raquel Willis, actor Jessica Marie Garcia, Puerto Rican feminist blogger Aliana Margarita Biggio Alcoba, actor Leah Lewis, Florida Rights Restoration Coalition's Tanisha Johnson, Representative Ayanna Presley, Native Alaskan student activist Sharidi Ropati, actor and activist Yara Shahidi, New York City Council candidate Shahana Hanif, and Black Lives Matter activist Thandiwe Abdullah weighed in on what voter suppression has looked like in their communities, why voting must be accompanied by vigorous on-the-ground organizing, and the complex meaning of this anniversary. These are some of the stories of the uncounted. Raquel Willis, activist, writer, and media strategist. It's hard to have a completely positive conversation about voting. I think the people who think there's a celebration on the horizon are often privileged white women who are well-to-do and not concerned with the fact that so many other folks are still struggling to have their voices heard. I was referring specifically to the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment being passed. But I do think there's often a mini celebration that happens at each election, and it's often visualized in all the I voted stickers that are put on the headstones of suffragettes who we laud in feminist history. But to me, I can't look at Elizabeth Cady Stanton or Susan B. Anthony as heroes. They were white supremacists, and the worst kind of white supremacists, who were aware of and in conversation with black folks and abolitionists like Ida B. Wells and Frederick Douglass, and still turned their backs on the fight for more access for black Americans. So this idea of limited liberation is not the kind of feminism I celebrate. And I think, just as we are having conversations about dismantling the structures erected but to honor the Confederacy, we need to be having a real conversation about who we celebrate in feminist history. I'm going to vote because I believe that harm reduction does still matter, but I do understand why there are people who put more energy into other ways of organizing and transforming our country. Electoral power is just one type of power that we have and can aspire to in this country. I'm more interested in a holistic conversation that focuses on a variety of ways people can organize and impact change. I have to call into account a lot of our politicians. I think about former President Barack Obama. I think we have a lot of folks who have a lot of power and a lot of platform who put all this energy into telling people to vote, but mum's the word for all the other action that is happening. How many of them are continuously encouraging the folks who are doing direct action on the ground and protesting? How many of them are routinely highlighting the work of the community organizers? Jessica Marie Garcia, actor. The 15th and 19th Amendments were really just saying what states can't do. They can't discriminate based on race and gender. But states found other ways to discriminate against Latinos and really all people of color. It's 100 years later, and we still see a laundry list of ways that black and brown voters are being suppressed. We see that in voter ID laws, which hit Latinos particularly hard. There are voter purges. There are voter registration restrictions, which can include cutting back use of mobile early voting, curbed voter registration drives. There's felony disenfranchisement, which makes it harder to restore voting rights to people with past criminal convictions. There's harassment at the polls. I think it's really easy as minorities and women in this country to believe that our voice doesn't count. We get reminded of this time and time again by the way we're depicted in the media, to wages, to healthcare. But it's important to remember that women are amazing. And we vote at higher rates than men across all racial and ethnic groups in the United States. I think we should always feel good about how far we have come, but never forget how far we still have to go. Right now, there are countless people across America and the world who are fighting for their freedom. It's mirroring exactly what is happening 100 years ago today. So it's hard to celebrate when the only thing that's really changed is the year. Aliana Biggio Alcoba, founder of feminist blog Con Sentimiento. Puerto Rico is one of the oldest colonies in the world. I think that what affects us most is that a lot of people don't really know that. And if they do, they don't know how little control we have over it. Every time Democrats bring us up, it's for election purposes. It's not to talk about how the fiscal control board is literally ruining every possibility our island has to move on and prosper economically and socially. It's never about the complicated and embarrassing things. We're kind of like ashamed, like something you hide in the closet and don't talk about. So I think when we talk about voting rights, it's very difficult for me to get on the same bandwagon of vote, register to vote, so everything will change, because it has never been like that for us. We've been at this for forever. We were Spain's colony, and then we were just passed to the U.S., so we've never known freedom. We were always taught the discourse of freedom, to repeat it like we actually live it, but we don't. Going back to the beginning of the 19th Amendment in the United States when it passed, they didn't even think about the women here in Puerto Rico who were not able to vote. We had to have our own suffrage movement, and it wasn't until 1935 that all women could vote here. So that's a 15-year delay. It had to be women who were from here. Ana Roque de Dupuy, Lisa Capetillo, Juana Colón, who had to figure it out and talk about, hey, we're literally owned by the United States. We're a colony of the United States. They already did this for their women. Why can't we have the same? Leah Lewis, actor. Given the fact that I grew up in a mixed household where I was an Asian adoptee and my parents were Caucasian, they never really talked about the history of discrimination that Chinese and other Asian Americans have been through. That's something that kind of gets brushed over in school too. When I actually discovered some of the information, it was so shocking. This country used Chinese Americans to build the railroads, and then the Chinese weren't even allowed to show up to the ceremony when the railroads opened. That alone gives me chills. The moment Asian Americans arrived here, they were met with, "We appreciate your participation and work, but we're not going to credit you for your participation." Even though that happened over 100 years ago, that pain still exists in Asian communities. Asian American voices have been muted in our society for too long. Unfortunately, I kind of feel like the past ends up being integrating previous prejudice into present-day life. When people are silenced for so long in someone's country that they call home, it can be very, very easy to disassociate from political opinion. It doesn't feel like you're part of the outcome. To me, voting means having a voice, which is kind of what we're all fighting for right now. I would tell Asian American teens specifically that the generation they live in is one of the strongest, loudest, and most passionate ones, that they can be a part of that and are a part of that. All right, looks like I've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. I'll finish that up next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.